information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
More empires have fallen because of reckless finances than invasion. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster for episode 157. It's February 12th, 2010, and we have all the alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups for you. Vancouver 2010 and the Terror Olympics, Portland provocateurs and CIA schools, Palin, Paul, and Tea Party propaganda, Iraniversary, infiltrators and the EMP space war, cyber shockwave, codex cohorts in the DNA database, police state updates, the coming green police, and good time Charlie. All that and so much more. February 12th, 2010, episode 157 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Whatever happened to the fear of God? Whatever happened to church on Sunday? Whatever happened to the velvet glove and the iron fist? Whatever happened to the social season? Whatever happened to the debutantes? Whatever happened to the South of France? Good old-fashioned brutality. Everything in its place. Good old-fashioned barbarity. Leave the room in disgrace. Whatever happened to drinking and driving? And doing the decent thing, hiding out on the continent, getting over a nervous breakdown, close the ranks and remove all traces, say anything to stay out of jail. What it really boils down to, it always wins, it never fails. Good old-fashioned brutality. Everything in its place. Good old-fashioned barbarity. Leave the room in disgrace. Whatever happened to brutality?
The UK band known as Black Box Recorder with a track called Brutality from their 2001 collection called The Worst of Black Box Recorder, asking the question, whatever happened to brutality? Which, of course, a few short months later, after that record came out, we saw Brutality, the day that changed everything. And that essentially is why I'm here today talking to you. The events of that day shined a light on so much more going on. And that's what I try and do on MediaMonarchy.com. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show Media Monarchy, Food World Order, and Cyberspace War. Like I said, it's February 12th, 2010. This is episode 157. Welcome to wherever you are in the world, however you may be listening. This transmission, as always, originates from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. And the fine list of affiliates, zeropointradio.com, blasts out worldwide, and FM and AM style 92.3 and 1670 in Casper, Wyoming, revereradio.net, the worldwide home of free speech. It's 1 o'clock on the East Coast. And of course, thanks to 93.9 in Boulder, Colorado, phantomradio.org, Free Radio Olympia in Washington State, frolympia.org, 98.5 FM, Berkeley, liberationradio.net, 104.1, KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, thanks to oneskyradio.com, blasting out 90.7 FM. 87.9 in Canton, Georgia, thanks to Ground Zero Radio. And of course, my man Glenn from right here in the People's Republic of Oregon, CascadiaPublicRadio.org and Radio23.org. If you'd like to rebroadcast the show, my man Jeff at Radio23.org supplies a higher quality podcast suitable for restreaming. Of course, you can connect up, make contact, news tips, facebook.com/Media Monarchy, and of course, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. It's all connected in more ways than one. So I want to say welcome to all the returning listeners and to any new listeners, and a thanks to anybody who has gotten in touch with me that I maybe haven't written back to or responded to. I can't get back to everybody, but I always appreciate a word, a kind word, a constructive word, news tip. One other thing, I suppose, on the business end, if you're a fan of the site, MediaMonarchy.com, I've been experimenting with some layout changes. You're going to see posts that say, see complete post at the bottom. If you click that, it'll expand and show you everything. It's a way to keep the front page kind of small. And then if you click that or click on the headline, you'll get the full expanded post, and that'll usually show all the videos and all the updates and all the extra things in there. There is very much to explore on MediaMonarchy.com because there, like I said, is so much to explore in the world. We always like to start these live shows out by looking at the breaking news. Health reform in limbo. Top drug lobbyist quits. Billy Tauzin, T-A-U-Z-I-N, one of the highest paid lobbyists in Washington, is resigning as president of the pharmaceutical industry's trade group amid internal disputes over its pact with the White House to trade political dot, dot, dot. You know what that dot, dot, dot is. Crony capitalism and the pharmaceutical industrial complex. Quite cozy with the Obamasiah. You got Vilsack and Michael Taylor, both of Monsanto, now in the USDA and FDA. Billy Clinton out of the hospital after heart surgery. And Patrick Kennedy won't seek re-election. The end of the Kennedy dynasty, they claim. But that's just a brief, cursory glance at the breaking news. And we'll return to it to see and to make sure and to keep tabs on all the strange developments. Again, here on Media Monarchy, I apologize to returning listeners who sometimes feel like it's a broken record, but you never know when there's going to be new listeners, and I'd like to explain in a way that the show's nonpartisan, both sides totally corrupt. 9/11 woke me up. I've been researching all of this for the past nearly 8 years. Doing the website MediaMonarchy.com for almost 5 years, the radio show for almost 4 years, hundreds of episodes, dozens of interviews. Because you know, if you tune in to the mainstream 24/7 corporate media blather, you think you're getting informed, but they're really throwing you crumbs and telling you it's a meal. So what I do with the site and what I try and do with the show is go through all the data mining and info collection that I do throughout the week and give it to you here and try and give you some context and give you the path to go do more research for yourself. Frankly, like I've said, there's sometimes, how could you not be interested in what's really going on? In more ways than one, it really, truly is the greatest show on earth. A great way to start off this episode is referencing my good friend James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, his latest episode of the Corbett Report, Vancouver 2010 and the Terror Olympics. Of course, we know the Vancouver 2012 Winter Olympics are kicking into gear as I speak. A lot of strange developments, of course, when there's any world event, you got to kind of peer back the curtain and see what little wizards are back there. But I digress. People from around the world are getting ready to enjoy the Winter Olympics, but the Vancouver Police, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Canadian military, and even the United States Army are preparing to take on anyone who dares to speak out against the Games. Episode 116, Vancouver 2010 and the Terror Olympics, talks to Kevin Annett and DJ Ball about the Vancouver police state, Olympic protest, and the possibility of false flag terror at the 2010 Games. James Corbett does a great job of laying out the sources, gives you the time code, the index, all of that. Again, you got to make it as easy as possible for folks. Not saying that to say people are stupid, but you got to lay it out quite simply. Here's the info. Here's the source. Here's the backup. We're going to briefly check out a nearly 3-year-old clip. So they've been prepping for this world event. And of course, during the Beijing Olympics several months ago, we went through on MediaMonarchy.com all the Nazi history of the Olympics and its symbolism. But from CTV, a clip nearly 3 years old talking about the preparation for the 2012 Olympics.
No fly lists, tougher identification rules, all part of the war on terrorism that will only intensify here in BC with the approach of the Olympic Games. Terrorism experts say our province is far from being immune to a potential threat. CTV's 2010 reporter Mike Killeen has more.
Like every Olympic host city, Vancouver is a potential target for terrorists.
They're a wonderful stage for the terrorists to advertise their cause.
Terrorism experts say Canada's military role abroad could provide the motive for retaliation in 2010.
Punish Canada for being in Afghanistan, punish the United States for being in Iraq. I mean, the largest contingent of athletes will be Americans. Other than Canadians, the largest number of tourists will be Americans. All viable targets.
That means a potential threat to Olympic venues, the airport, port, and other transportation systems. The big challenge, securing airspace over the lower mainland and Whistler.
A the Canadian Air Force will not be enough. They will take a good chunk of the U.S. Air Force. So NORAD will have to assume the responsibility for security.
YVR officials recently removed detailed diagrams of the airport's critical infrastructure systems from its website. Security experts called them a terrorist's guide to YVR.
And then there's the issue of security costs. No one seems to believe the $175 million that's been budgeted will be anywhere near enough.
That clip goes on. That just kind of sets the table for you. Because there's a lot more interesting things tying into this. Let's grab a quick report from the Times Online. Unlawful anti-terror powers planned for 2012 Olympics. Police are planning to use an anti-terror law deemed unlawful by the European Court of Human Rights across the country during the London Olympics. The Times has learned. The London Olympics. Oh, I'm sorry. I've jumbled up the fascist sporting events. So let's correct this. This is for the London 2012, you know, with its sort of Zion-like logo. Police are planning to use an anti-terror law deemed unlawful by the European Court of Human Rights across the country during the London Olympics. Senior officers are considering using Section 24 of the Terrorism Act of 2000, with a link for you to read it, at every underground and railway station nationwide. Privacy campaigners criticized the proposal. The powers would enable police to stop and search members of the public without any suspicion that they were involved in terrorism. The Times understands that this would be the first time that the powers would have been used across such a wide area, even though we noted that they've been deemed unlawful in the first place. Warning signs of an impending Olympic attack. And I don't want to be one of these folks who's always predicting some date or they're going to do something at this. Or we try and look at the signs and look at the strange bits that, again, the mainstream media doesn't give you the context and the subtext. So we try and pick up the loose change, if you will. What ties in and what other folks have gone into in much better and greater detail, I will briefly go over. Basically, recently, near Vancouver, 2 tons of ammonium nitrate went missing from a shipment to a storage facility after leaving the packaging plant at Dyno Noble. The company, Kinder Morgan, was purchased by Goldman Sachs, AIG, and the Carlyle Group. So a company that's missing ammonium nitrate, the same stuff that blew up the Murrah building, or some of the stuff. Of course, we always have to reference the Ryder truck that was surveilled parked in an Army facility in the days leading up to OKC. We've noted the fear-mongering from the intel chiefs about Al-Qaeda and an attack very soon using ammonium nitrate. So now, at the site of the Olympics nearby, you've got a company that was recently bought up by the Carlyle Group. There's even a connection to Marshall Riconosciuto. He's the owner of Dyno Noble, one of the companies, along with Goldman and AIG and Carlyle, that have gobbled up Kinder Morgan. His son, of course, Michael Riconosciuto, CIA asset connected to Inslaw, Promise Software, Danny Casolaro, and the Octopus. If you're unfamiliar with what I'm talking about, just Google any of those terms and you'll find all about it. These are the signs that make people nervous. People that are paying attention. So you can get that and so much more in this latest Corbett Report, episode 116. Just some of the things I referenced, of course. Also the new Sunday update videos from Corbett Report. Tons of videos, interviews with Bob Chapman and other activists, researchers, scientists. So, James Corbett and I do a weekly 10-minute YouTube series called The New World Next Week. I think we've done about 18 of them now. So I've got the two most recent ones to go over for you. We've got the video from February 6th where the three stories that we go over are ones that I covered last week on episode 156 of Media Monarchy. All the domestic terror drills from Minnesota to Washington, D.C. to NORAD and FAA running drills around the Super Bowl. Threataganda rising in the intel chiefs, what I just referenced before. They are certain Al Qaeda will stage another terror attack soon. And of course, the four guys arrested in the Louisiana Watergate shenanigans all pretty much have connections to the Central Intelligence Agency documented. We went all over that all last week. But the newest episode of The New World Next Week for February 10th, the three stories that we cover, I'm going to go over in this episode as well. So I don't want to be, again, too repetitive. And I apologize if I am. The three stories, they all connect. They're all essentially about, from the local level to the national level to the international level, the feds and the rogue networks and the Western finance oligarchs. Again, we say the U.S. did something or our leaders did this. Think of them as gangsters and banksters and multi-generational serial killers. They owe and pay no allegiance to any nation or any god, just the god of gold, oil, and drugs. And of a lot of occult trappings as well. The feds are putting agents deep undercover. And the first one is from my backyard. This story is amazing. And there's only a very little bit of information that I can glean about this. And I've tried to put my feelers out and get a little bit more. Perhaps folks out there, if you got something, fill me in. MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. Portland professor accuses student of being FBI provocateur. This coming from one of Portland State University's newspapers, DailyVanguard.com. A tenured Portland State economics professor is currently suspended from teaching after he publicly accused a student during a class lecture of being an FBI informant and trying to sell guns to students. Professor John Hall, during his 2 p.m. economics comparative economic systems class, on January 14th, verbally harangued student Zachary Bucharest, B-U-C-H-A-R-E-S-T, for nearly half an hour, according to other students in the class. Hall's taught at PSU for 24 years, and he started that class relevant to the course material. But about halfway through the two-hour-long class, he started to talk about his experiences with law enforcement in other countries, including Eastern Europe. Professor Hall claimed to have been surveilled at times throughout his life and then told the class that an FBI informant and agent provocateur was in their midst. Hall said this person served as a sniper in the Israeli army and called him a killer with access to a personal arsenal. He then pointed at Zachary Bucharest and identified him as the informant in question. Zachary Bucharest, if that is your real name, a student at PSU since the fall of 2006 and the current chief of staff for ASPSU, with a link for you, still on file with his email address. Bucharest sat silently throughout the ordeal, according to other students in the class. Hall accused Bucharest of trying to organize students to participate in violent acts against the university. Hall said that he believed that Bucharest is at times armed while on campus. He then put a letter on the document projector that he wrote to the FBI's Portland field office. In the letter, Hall claims to know Bucharest's identity as an agent. He then handed Bucharest a copy of the letter and told him to give it to his superiors. After a moment of silence, Bucharest got up and said that some of Hall's claims about his military background were true, but that other claims the professor made were not. Professor Hall basically said in his statement, now of course nobody's talking, only through their lawyers. Hall said, quote, "I decided to take a stand. I observed the situation becoming extremely dangerous, not only for me, but for about eight of my very finest students. I felt what I had to do should not have been my responsibility." On the flip side, Bucharest made a statement through his attorney, Eldon Rosenthal, saying, quote, I have never been affiliated with the FBI in any way, and I have never been an informant. I've never in any way done anything to incite violence at PSU. I've admired Professor Hall since I first took a class from him and cannot imagine what I did or said to cause him to treat me the way he did. I truly hope that the university will take steps to clear my name, and I also hope that something like this will never happen again to a PSU student. The channel called Slackmaster7 on YouTube is the only place I found a video related to this story, and he grabbed it from, I believe, someone else who grabbed it from our local Fox News station. So let's hop to the Fox News for a little more on Portland professor John Hall accusing student Zachary Bucharest of being an agent provocateur.
Tonight, Portland State University is investigating a professor for some comments he made in his class. Professor John Hall is banned from teaching on campus while the school looks into something Hall said about one of the students in his economics class. KPTV's Brent Weisberg is back from PSU where this is all the buzz, Brent.
Well, a student inside that classroom tells us Professor Hall went on a rant singling out a student, saying that student worked with the FBI. Now, PSU is taking a serious look at the professor's actions.
Professor Hall is someone that a lot of people really love and respect.
John Hall's office at Portland State University remains locked. Administrators recently told the tenured professor for now he could no longer teach at the school.
The whole situation is actually pretty crazy, to be honest.
The decision to keep Hall out of the classroom comes after a student of Hall's filed a complaint, saying Hall made misleading comments about him to a room full of economic students. That student's attorney claimed Hall told the class that the student worked for the FBI.
I think it was unethical for him to do it in front of an entire class.
I don't think the professor has any right to get into a student's personal life.
The student and his attorney declined to comment on camera, but instead issued a statement to Fox 12 which reads, quote, I have never been affiliated with the FBI in any way, and I have never been an informant. Now, PSU officials are investigating exactly what Hall said and why he said it. They stress the professor has not been suspended and add he is still being paid, but he cannot teach until the probe is complete. On campus tonight, people we talk to say they are still shocked at what has happened.
I would think that, you know, in a classroom, especially a college classroom, there'd be mutual respect between the professor and the students.
And many students worry the situation could have a lasting impact.
It seems to just be a really sad case of misunderstanding and assumptions.
We spoke with the FBI. They say they do not have or have never had any ties with the student or the professor in question, Professor Hall, that is. They say they are aware of the comments made, but they are not investigating the matter. And we made multiple attempts to contact Professor Hall, and we did not hear back from him tonight. Reporting live in News Control tonight, Brent Weisberg at 10 o'clock news.
Now, you'll notice in that clip there was no reference whatsoever to him being a sniper for the Israeli army, or trying to get weapons for other students, or talking about violent acts with other students. Which I've talked to someone and gotten information essentially, you know, second, third hand. And from what I can gather, it seemed like folks knew that this guy was kind of shady. There's a limited hangout update for you from Oregon blogger PreemptiveKarma.com of snipers, FBI informants, and unproven accusations, but let's broaden the scope a little bit. In the latest edition of Counterpunch magazine, it's not on the website as of yet, counterpunch.org, the anthropologist David Price reveals the U.S. intelligence community has established academic outposts at 22 universities, U.S. universities, over the past 4 years. Government agencies including the CIA, FBI, NSA, DIA, and DHS have helped found intelligence community centers for academic excellence, pronounced ICKY.
The ICKYs aim to create, quote, a systematic long-term program at universities and colleges to recruit and hire eligible talent for intelligence community agencies and components and increase the intelligence recruiting pipeline of students. David Price broke the story for a Counterpunch newsletter in the article Silent Coup, How the CIA is Welcoming Itself Back onto American University Campuses. David Price is a founding member of the Network of Concerned Anthropologists, which just published the counter insurgency Emergency Manual, or Notes on Demilitarizing American Society. He's Associate Professor of Anthropology at St. Martin's University in Lacey, Washington, and the author of Anthropological Intelligence, The Deployment and Neglect of American Anthropology in the Second World War. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Professor Price. Tell us what is happening on U.S. campuses.
Good morning, Amy. Has actually started, you know, probably 20 years ago, as American university campuses, sort of a piece at a time, started shifting towards more of a corporatization model, so that the interest for research, rather than coming directly from professors, often came from outside sources. Since 9/11, there was a very dramatic shift where President Bush and members of Congress and members of the intelligence community in the Pentagon started a real hue and cry, saying that somehow 9/11 could have been prevented if only there were greater links between the intelligence community and academia. And after this post 9/11 move, there were many programs, things like the Pat Roberts Intelligence Scholars Program or the Intelligence Community Scholars Program, which secretly link scholars with intelligence agencies and embed them on campuses doing scholarship, and programs like the Minerva Consortium for the Pentagon. This latest program, ICI, is very surprising how aggressive it is. As you said, it's now on 22 university campuses where these centers are openly established.
Of course, you'll notice him referencing Bush and Pat Robertson. That clip, of course, from Democracy Now!, the foundation-funded alternative media. We don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, but again, when you think you step outside one box, you've stepped inside another box. They've got every little alternative for you all figured out. So, of course, they pin the blame on those previous supposedly conservative puppets, even though it continues as we speak with our latest supposedly progressive puppet president. So much more on that. CIA welcoming itself back on campus, and of course, the explosive story of a Portland State University professor accusing one of his students of being an Israeli sniper and an FBI agent provocateur. I feel fairly certain we'll find out more as time goes by, and hopefully MediaMonarchy.com will be a source for you on this topic. Expanding this topic, and the second thing James and I go over on the latest New World next week, Ron Paul, somewhat under attack, and also having to sort of distance himself from the co-opted fiasco known as the Tea Party. Neocon influence is infiltrating the Liberty Movement. This from Raw Story. In the face of several electoral challenges from Tea Party-connected candidates, Texas Republican Congressman Ron Paul cautioned in a recent interview that neocon influence is infiltrating the movement he is often credited for creating. Not entirely true. This ties in essentially with Sarah Palin and her appearance at the recent Tea Party convention, and we've told you time and time again that faux populist wannabe libertarian phonies like Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin are no friend to the Liberty Movement. Anytime you see a real grassroots movement happening, you're going to see the shills co-opt it and misdirect it. Time and time and time again. Sarah Palin endorsed Rand Paul, Ron Paul's son, on his Kentucky Senate bid. There are a few interview clips and things along with this post. And again, links for you to do more research on this. There's a video by way of InfoWars basically going further. Neocon Palin's Tea Party takeover will facilitate Obama re-election. the turncoats and deceivers flocking from the weakened GOP and Fox News wings to harness the populist uprising that briefly found life outside of the traditional two-party system. Palin made more than headlines this past week, attempting a takeover of the Tea Party movement, backing GOP hack Rick Perry over a real and viable candidate, pitching for war on Iran, and assessing Obama's weaknesses in 2012. So if you see a fool like Sarah Palin with the GOP nomination or anything like it, it's fake opposition. The phony left-right paradigm keeps us stuck. And we talk about this time and time again on the show. But you'll see, anytime people start to break out of that box, like I just said, there's another box waiting for you. Let's wrap up this neocon infiltration of the liberty movement with the flip side and get a report from Fox News. And again, as the phony parties come in and out of favor, you'll see their supporters and sycophants alternately do good work and bad work. So all during the criminal Bush regime, the left and even just the mainline wannabe progressive foundation-funded left did great work exposing the criminal actions of the illegal puppet President Bush. Olbermann and Maddow and Democracy Now and all those fronts. But now it's shifted. They've all gone to sleep. And the neocon press, again, it essentially comes down to money. They lick their finger and put it up in the wind and see which way the winds are going to blow, and they shift themselves that way. Rupert Murdoch knows that. He runs Sky News over in the UK, and they're very critical of US foreign policy. But if you watch his channels in the States, you'd think it was an arm of the GOP. So this from Fox News, anti-Tea Party website, part of scheme to funnel funds, a new website targeting the Tea Parties. So again, this is the phony left versus the phony right. A new website targeting the Tea Parties is a part of a complex network of money flowing from the mountainous coffers of the country's biggest labor unions and trickling slowly into political slush funds for Democratic activists. A seemingly grassroots organization that's mounted an online campaign to counter the Tea Party movement is actually the front end of an elaborate scheme that funnels funds, including sizable labor union contributions, through the offices of a prominent Democratic Party lawyer. A website popped up in January dedicated to preventing the Tea Party's radical and dangerous ideas from gaining legislative traction, targeting GOP candidates in Illinois for the firing squad. This movement is a fad, proclaims theteapartyisover.org, which was established by the American Public Policy Center, a D.C.-based campaign shop that few people have ever heard of. But a close look reveals the APPC's place in a complex network of money flowing from the mountainous coffers of the labor unions into slush funds for Democratic, quote-unquote, activists. How many of these things are intelligence connected? We referenced the Louisiana Watergate, where you've got guys with connections to the CIA doing a botched bugging on a Democratic senator. Was it botched on purpose? To draw attention? We're going to talk a little bit later about the rogue networks. But essentially, in the black ops, in the rogue networks, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. The third story of infiltration that we cover on the most recent New World Next Week. Iran claims arrest of two CIA agents ahead of their February 11th events, 2/11. Iran detained seven spies tied to U.S.-funded radio station. So we've got reports from Raw Story and CNN and VOA News and Canadian Press and Businessweek.com. But let's take the report from Iranian state media, from PressTV.ir. Iran said last Saturday it arrested seven people, including two CIA operatives who planned to stoke unrest and violence on a march scheduled for February 11th. The rally, which has now already happened, it was Thursday, 2/11, to commemorate the 31st victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. Intel forces, according to the Borna news agency, arrested the men who had plans to leave the country for Dubai and then head to the U.S. According to the report, some of those arrested work for the U.S.-backed Radio Farda, F-A-R-D-A, a Persian language station based in Prague and Washington.
Iran's intelligence ministry says it has arrested seven people linked to anti-revolutionary media outlets. The intelligence ministry says the detainees have received training to disrupt public order, spread rumors, and conduct sabotage. It also said some of them had been hired by the U.S. intelligence agency. The Iranian intelligence ministry said the detainees played an important role in post-election riots, particularly on the holy day of Ashura, and were plotting similar activities.
A lot of strange updates surrounding this. Now, like I said, of course, we've passed the 2/11 date. Internet down in Iran ahead of opposition protests. That is from Raw Story. And this extrapolates even further. My man, Clyde Lewis, from right here in Portland, late of the Ground Zero Lounge, is now blasting out on tens of thousands of watts on KUFO FM here in Portland, Oregon, KUFO.com. Sunday nights, he does Ground Zero. This last Sunday, he had as his guest Freeman of FreemanTV.com. They, of course, are quite good at picking up what we referred to earlier as the loose change, at the points that most people don't notice. They don't connect some of the dots. Now, of course, some of this was speculative by its very nature. And we have up that episode, a moment of it from KUFO. You can support Clyde Lewis and ZeroPointRadio.com by hopping over there and getting it for one little dollar. We also have tied in Freeman's recent appearance on Red Ice Creations Radio. So let's just take it from Freeman himself. Clyde Lewis had made connections with the threat of an Iranian EMP attack. That's electromagnetic pulse. In an article by Defense Tech. That article was just a year ago, and it was a year to the day of the recent Iranian launch, where, among other things, they launched a mouse, a turtle, and worms into space. So a year prior to that, in 2009, Defense Tech wrote an article all worried about Iran and ICBMs. So leading up to 2/11, the anniversary, Iraniversary of the Islamic Revolution, Iran anniversary punch will stun the West. They claim to, they wanted to deliver a one-punch blow to the arrogant West. So we have linked up in the headlines that connect to all of this, the threatagenda coming from Iran, and all that this ties into, again, with our new cyber president. He goes over to Norway to pick up his peace prize, and an amazing space spiral appears in the sky on some bizarre level. Clyde Lewis and Freeman break down the coming space war, and again, that's why I started one of my sister sites, cyberspacewar.com, to go over this, because we can see it. We can see it coming. Even our equipment is breaking down, as you can tell. There we go. Things fall apart. Now, what was I saying? We're basically talking about Iraniversary and the coming space war with electromagnetic pulse attacks and threats from all around. we heard reference in the clip we played just a little while ago about the Vancouver Olympics, where someone said, well, the Olympics are a great place for terrorists to advertise their cause. If you have learned who's really behind the terror, when you hear statements like that, you know they're telling the truth. The black op networks are generally behind the massive terror events, as we go over time and time again on this show. So when you hear them talk about the terrorists, you know that they're talking about themselves. Those are the three stories that we go over on the latest New World next week. And again, I always recommend those 10-minute videos for folks who aren't going to listen to me run my mouth for 2 hours on a weekly podcast. The videos are really well produced from CorbettReport.com. The info is there. The links are provided. We don't try and make up your minds. We just give you the info, give you the map, and hopefully you will do the research and spread the word to your friends and families. So speaking of cyberspace war, let's hop over to cyberspacewar.com and cover a recent article from CorbettReport.com on the rising tide of internet censorship. Again, this all connects. The only way we're doing what we're doing right now is because we still have the web. The focus is back on internet censorship this week as a pair of articles from Time Magazine and the New York Times came out almost simultaneously, both advocating for licenses to operate websites. Now, both of those articles were skillfully skewered by Paul Joseph Watson as the lame attempts that they are to shore up a disintegrating establishment media in the face of alternative news and a blogosphere that is increasingly replacing them. We, of course, have links to the Paul Joseph Watson article as well as the originals from the New York Times, Driver's Licenses for the Internet. Same title from the Time Magazine piece. The articles follow on calls by Craig Mundy, Microsoft's chief research and strategy officer for an internet licensing system, introducing the idea, he said, quote, we need a kind of World Health Organization for the internet. Apparently he was unaware of the WHO's role in manufacturing the swine flu hoax to line the pockets of Big Pharma, but Mundy added that an international internet authority should be given the same kind of authority that the WHO has in dealing with a pandemic. When there's a pandemic, it organizes the quarantine of cases. We're not allowed to organize the systematic quarantine of machines that are compromised. The Obama presidency has seen an increase in hype over cybersecurity threats, with the influential CSIS think tank having written white papers with a download for you, the PDF Securing Cyberspace, proposing cybersecurity as a key issue for the 44th president. As CorbettReport.com reported last July, CSIS argued for minimum standards for securing cyberspace because voluntary action is not enough. Shortly after Obama took office last year, Senator Jay Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller IV, the shame of my home state of West Virginia, introduced a bill, Senate Bill 773, that would have given the president the power to, quote, declare a cybersecurity emergency and essentially shut down the internet. In a video, and we played that clip for you, Rockefeller even goes on to speculate maybe it would have been better if the internet wasn't invented at all. And we don't have time to get into all the other connections of essentially the military giving us the internet. Perhaps it was always meant to be a worldwide wiretap. You could go more esoteric and say that those who hide information also have something called the revelation of the method that ultimately they'll show you how they've done their trick because it's part of their occult beliefs. We don't have time to get into all of that right now, but basically what we'll say again and again and again is that we have to use the web as much as we can while it still exists in the way that it exists right now. You need to start your own show or website or zine, radio show or video, newspaper. meetup groups. Continuing on cyberspacewar.com, you know, last week we covered a lot of the military drills and war games, and we do so because those drills perform a multitude of functions, acclimating those performing the drills to treating America like a police state in the form of the police drills. It also desensitizes the public to seeing the military roll down their street. It also gives the rogue networks the opportunity to make a drill go live. And like we said, good people in all levels of government have tried to stop and have exposed things like this. But the powers that be say no, let it go ahead. We're aware of that terrorist. He's under surveillance. Go ahead and let him go. He's part of an operation. The drills on 9/11, the drills on 7/7. Southcom recently running a drill about what would happen if a tsunami hit Haiti. With all their AI software, they were drilling, they were practicing if a tsunami hit Haiti the day before the earthquake hit Haiti. This ties in with weather wars and HAARP and Tesla and all the things that tie into that, that again refer to all the things I was talking about with Clyde Lewis and Freeman. Miltech insiders to stage cyber shockwave drill on February 16th. This coming from Kurt Nimmo. The Bipartisan Policy Center, BPC, bipartisanpolicy.org, plans to simulate a cyber attack on America's infrastructure on February 16th, 2010. Dubbed Cyber Shockwave, the simulation, quote, will provide an unprecedented look at how the government would develop a real-time response to a large-scale cyber crisis affecting much of the nation, according to a BPC press release linked. The cyber attack is going to be wargamed in public for all the country to see. It will be quite realistic, featuring senior intelligence and national security officials, including former directors of intelligence agencies and combatant commands and homeland security advisors, writes Mark Ambinder for The Atlantic link. In other words, a handful of well-placed corporations stand to make a fortune on the prospect of a cyber attack. In addition, a message will be sent to the Senate warning that it should pass cybersecurity legislation. Remember that reference, Senate Bill 773, that would have given Obama the authority to shut down the internet? Bipartisanpolicy.org has a quick little video about cyber shockwave.
In the last decade, cyber attacks crippled government and commercial websites and caused billions of dollars in financial losses. The Slammer Worm shuts down Bank of America's ATMs, Continental Airlines ticketing systems, and Seattle's 911 network. As Russia invades Georgia, their first strike is to destroy Georgian government websites. Chinese hackers steal data from Google and 30 other major U.S. and international companies. Where will they strike us next? Cyber Shockwave, February 16th, 2010.
Continuing, General Dynamics, one of the leading death merchants at the very heart of the military-industrial complex that, you know, Eisenhower warned us about a couple of decades ago during that so-called contrived Cold War. Even though Wernher von Braun, you know, that Nazi that we brought over as part of Project Paperclip to help us build rockets to get to space with NASA. He said they'd use the Cold War, then they'd use terrorism, then they'd use asteroids, and then possibly a fake alien event. Again, this extrapolates into a much wider field. Project Bluebeam and all of that. But I digress again. General Dynamics, is a leading death merchant at the heart of the military-industrial complex. Eisenhower warned us about a few decades ago during the contrived so-called Cold War. When it comes to military spending, the tradition of the Iron Triangle, Congress, Pentagon, and defense industries joining to push costly weaponry is nothing new, Brad Knickerbocker wrote for the Christian Science Monitor. Link, link, link. Bipartisan Policy Center directors hail from Lockheed Martin, L3 Communications, a nice spook merchant, J.P. Morgan Securities, and the Rockefeller-connected Aspen Institute. It is business as usual. The government and large corporations setting off fire alarms in order to stampede the American people into the government's high-tech surveillance and control grid, an operation that will reward the likes of General Dynamics and L3 handsomely. Cyber Shockwave will take place on February 16, 2010, at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel in the District of Criminals. The simulation will begin at 10 a.m., followed by a question-and-answer session with the participants, the audience, and media. Concerned citizens may want to attend that Q&A session and ask why the government and an insider think tank stacked with neocons, neolibs, death merchants, and spook corporations are pushing a largely contrived threat on the American people. Hopefully someone will do that. That's a call out to the folks in the District of Criminals. Furthermore, on cyberspacewar.com from the BBC, sat-nav devices face big errors as solar activity rises. We've noted time and time again as the sun, being the most likely culprit and the driver of climate change, Sun Cycle 23 happened. We've noted the low period that we've been in. However, Solar Cycle 24 will be arriving soon. Again, space war. Researchers say the sun is awakening after a period of low activity, which doesn't bode well for a world ever more dependent on satellite navigation. The sun's irregular activity can wreak havoc with the weak satellite navigation signals we use. The last time the sun reached a peak in activity, satellite navigation was barely a consumer product. But the sun is on its way to another solar maximum, which could generate large and unpredictable sat-nav errors. This ties into the smart grid. This ties into all that we've just discussed. And as we've said many, many times, the powers that be have already admitted, Richard Clark, former counter-terror czar, and even Professor Lawrence Lessig have admitted that there is an iPatriot Act sitting on the shelf waiting for a catalyzing catastrophic cyberspace war event. Let's quickly go through some of the last few headlines on cyberspacewar.com on the DEFCON 210 news purge. Broadband threats and censorship protests. Our good friends at Google to offer ultra-high-speed broadband in the U.S. That's from the BBC. A follow-up on something we hit last week. Of course, you know, Google getting into bed, I guess getting further into bed. Now the clothes are just flying off with the NSA. AllGov.com asks if Google can protect its users while working with the NSA. John Brennan, Threataganda, says the U.S. faces serious threats in cyberspace. That's from the newinternet.com. Hugo Chavez of Venezuela puts the country under an electricity emergency. Again, from the BBC. Again, this ties into the smart grid and the control grid, for that matter. Chavez, of course, recently accused the West of using weather weapons during a drill to hit Haiti with a quake. Australian government websites face censorship protest. More on that from the AFP. That's what happens when people with computer savvy get pissed off at your government being a part of the crown and taking away internet freedoms. They put porn on the websites, but still, a protest is a protest. Fascinating article from the New York Times, put into perspective by Cryptogon.com. A family spends $5,000 a year on screen-related services. Follows this family around on all their Xboxes and Blackberries and iPhones and wireless and all that stuff. SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, SETI.org.com, I forget. SETI's now opened all their data and coding to the public. That, by way of newsjunkiepost.com, BlackBerry has spyware risk too. Mozilla overlooked malware-laced Firefox add-ons. The update to that is that they ended up incorrectly flagging some add-ons. That was malware. Again, more on all those stories from theregister.co.uk and CNET News. The last one is a strange one. I was going to play the clip, but then there's just not time to get into William Shatner talking about witnessing hoax technology right before the Apollo moon mission. Josh Reeves of theglobalreality.com goes further into this. Cyberspace war indeed, my friends. So, before we jump to Food World Order, let's take a quick moment. We've talked about the drills. We've talked about the war games and the exercises. But it's just a test. Beastie Boys, just a test. Had this been an actual emergency. My friends, we're now into hour number two of episode 157 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, CyberspaceWar.com, and FoodWorldOrder.com. It's the 12th of February, 2010, and we're coming to you, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org. And again, our fine list of affiliates, ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, PhantomRadio.org, FrOlympia.org, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, OneSkyRadio.com, StickAM.com/GroundZeroRadio, CascadiaPublicRadio.org, and Radio23.org. Welcome aboard. We're going to kick off this second hour by jumping to FoodWorldOrder.com. With an interesting update from FarmWars.info, USDA dropping National Animal Identification System, NAIS. If you've adopted a pet anytime in the last several years, they have a microchip inside them. slowly pushing the microchip agenda. You've heard them talk about possibly putting microchips in Alzheimer's patients, so your grandma doesn't get lost. Other countries have talked about implanting chips in people with HIV to track them. Chips have been put into our passports and our products. So whether or not this is actually going away, or as they tend to do, programs end and they pop up like whack-a-mole with some different name with the same agenda. You'll notice our supposed leaders kind of do the same thing. A USDA press release put out February 5th states that implementation of NAIS has been ceased, and instead, Agriculture Secretary ex-Monsanto Vilsack will opt for a state and tribal-run system. We've got a Q&A, USDA Animal ID Q&A from FarmWars.info, and the full press release from USDA.gov. USDA announces new framework for animal disease traceability. Now, I've added that full article for you to check out, the full press release. It's all there for you on foodworldorder.com. The next story, by way of AllGov, as we've been tracking the water wars in the food world order, disposing of unused medicines and trash may threaten water supply. There is no truly safe way for consumers to dispose of unwanted medications, according to officials in Maine, which has led to a push for legislation requiring the pharma industry to collect and destroy leftover drugs. For years, Americans used to dump old prescriptions down the drain or the toilet until water districts warned that the habit could contaminate local drinking supplies, and it has. So then the message became, discard the drugs in the garbage that is dumped in landfills. But a waste management leader in Maine found this practice could still contaminate water supplies and the environment because rainwater can carry pharmaceutical residues out of the landfills and into underground water supplies. After studying the flow of drug-tainted water from three landfills, the Maine Department of Environmental Protection concluded the state should ban the throwing away of medications. Furthermore, State Representative Ann Perry sponsoring a bill in the legislature that would require drug companies to reclaim unwanted drugs and toss them into medical waste incinerators. More documentation from allgov.com, as well as some of the important flashbacks we have for you. Going back to December of last year, bottled water sales leaking, but tap water increasingly unsafe. We've talked about the rocket fuel and the drugs and the poisons that are in the water, the levels that the EPA say are okay, but even beyond those disgusting levels, the EPA, of course, being the folks who told people that the air was safe to breathe at ground zero. Millions in U.S. drink dirty water. And we've referenced time and time again the amazing story of Fiji water. Spin the bottle, the politics of water. All that and so much more, again, is on foodworldorder.com. Let's run down the 211 binge and purge with a quick list of headlines on Codex, cocktails, and cola cancer. Foodfreedom.wordpress.com has a new article as well as a video asking the question, how organic is organic? And we're going to learn a little bit about Codex Alimentarius and how their cohorts are waging a war against food.
How organic is organic? Take a moment to pause and consider what it is you are eating on a daily basis. More and more people are trying to consume a healthy diet these days. Just what constitutes a healthy diet is a matter of great contention. Many, including myself, contend that limiting your exposure to pesticides, food additives, and genetically modified foods is a good start, and thus have begun eating organic foods. In order to eat only healthy natural foods, we must first determine how organic is organic. Will organic and homegrown foods be bred and legislated out of existence? What is Codex Alimentarius? And how does it and corporate farming threaten biodiversity, organic farms, and even personal allotments or home gardens? For those of us committed to improving or maintaining our health by eating a balanced organic diet, the agenda of corporate farming and governmental regulations complying with Codex Alimentarius proposals spells disaster. This not only affects our access and right to additive-free, pesticide-free, industrial-produced, chemical fertilizer-free, and non-genetically modified organic foods, it also threatens every participating country's rights of national sovereignty. In the United States of America, the new federal food bill also threatens the constitutional sovereignty of the states. What is Codex Alimentarius? Codex Alimentarius is an organization which works in conjunction with the Food and Agricultural Organization and the World Health Organization, which were all formed by the United Nations.
So that's just a brief clip from the Food Freedom video about Codex Alimentarius. The book, or rather that term, basically means the food code book. And this is essentially the powers that be getting together to decide what is a natural remedy. And it ties into food and naturopathic things that have grown on the planet Earth since the beginning of time. Again, I always reference Bill Hicks talking about making marijuana illegal is like saying God made a mistake. Ultimately, this is all a war on consciousness, as we've said, but that war on consciousness takes many forms. So whether it's the police state war games that we've talked about, or the cyberspace war, the fact that they want to punch you in the Facebook. But the level that you can do something about it is on the food level. You can, to a great extent, control what you do and don't put in your body, and you can vote with your dollar. That's why I started foodworldorder.com. Further down this list of headlines, quickly, you can read and learn more about Codex Alimentarius and something that ties in from nationalpost.com. Pharmaceutical regulators say stop selling unlicensed natural health remedies. They want the control. You can argue that's why weed isn't legal, because they can't patent it. They can't make money off of it. One single biopharma corporation can't own it. And of course, we could power cars and make paper and textiles and heal lots of problems and all those things with hemp. Grow more hemp. But I digress again. Food stamps at another higher level, setting a record day by day, seemingly. This article from The Guardian pointing out that U.S. food stamps are at an ever higher record of 32.8 million. China recalls another 170 tons of melamine-tainted milk. More on that from Food Safety News. And the flashback back to January on foodworldorder.com, another melamine-tainted milk scandal in China. Also have a video about that on youtube.com/media monarchy. New York City cracks down on eggs in cocktails. And lastly, from the Telegraph, soft drinks may increase risk of pancreatic cancer. Now we're going to shift back to MediaMonarchy.com and get all the latest BioWars and EnviroHealth updates that, again, it's all related. It's all related. Babies, Bayer, and synthetic organisms. First up is something that we have hit before, but anytime new information spills out, especially when it's admissions coming from the mainline corporate media, letting things slip out, not by accident. It's not, how did they slip that through? They're announcing these things to you. They set it up in advance, and then they'll announce it to you when it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that the government has your baby's DNA.
So what if I told you the government has your baby's DNA? Newborns are routinely screened for a series of genetic diseases, and in some states, that DNA is stored even without your consent. Senior medical correspondent Liz Cohen talking about this and the controversy it's sort of bringing about.
Oh, right, because parents don't know. I think we parents have no idea that our kids' DNA is stored in state labs, sometimes for decades. I know I have four children, and I didn't know that. I think a lot of parents know that our kids get tested for certain genetic diseases, but we don't necessarily know that that DNA is kept in a state lab with our child's name attached. And I think that's the important thing. A lot of people wonder, gosh, if my kid's DNA is there, they know if my child has some kind of terrible disease. That report could end up in the hands of an employer. That report could end up in the hands of health insurance, because health insurance paid to get the testing in the first place. Now, if you want to learn more about this, you can go to CNN.com/empoweredpatient, and you can see how long your state keeps DNA. Some states keep that DNA indefinitely. It'll be there forever.
Don't you have to ask permission, though, to do this? That's kind of what's crazy about this is you don't have to ask permission. The state says that these diseases they're testing for are so awful and so deadly that they're going to test without asking your permission. So whether you agree with that or not, I think what's sort of shocking is that it then gets stored also without your permission. So you don't have to sign a single thing. And again, your health insurance pays for this testing. So your health insurance then knows about 50 different diseases in some states, whether or not your child has these 50 different diseases. And they might say, you know what, we don't feel like insuring this child anymore.
What if you just don't want it stored?
Well, in some states, you can actually go online to the State Department of Health and you can fill out a form that says, please destroy my child's DNA. But in other states, there is no such form. You can try writing a letter, but I've talked to several experts on there and they're kind of like, good luck. I mean, you can write the letter, but the state doesn't have to listen to you. They can just keep storing it.
All right. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thanks.
The state doesn't have to listen to you. They can just keep storing it. So when they talk about being able to identify when your baby has certain diseases, that all goes in the database. And if we're projecting not too far ahead, and we were just talking about the microchipping. And again, those kind of chips don't have to be implanted yet. They can just be in a card we carry around. Our national IDs already contain digital, biometrically enhanced photos. More on biometrics in just a little bit. This truly is a Gattaca-type world being set up. And again, it's been set up for a long time. They seem to be putting the finishing touches on it. And that's why they're announcing it to us. And that's why it's so dire that we're trying to talk about this shit right now. Mass vaccination planned in Haiti as the death toll continues way up. Again, vaccinations are a great tool of soft kill from the eugenicists, the multi-generational serial killers. Mumps outbreak spreads among people who got vaccinated against the mumps. We see that time and time again. And this ties in with the distrust of the vaccines and the pharmaceutical industry. A little bit of good news from Reuters. Bayer to pay $1.5 million in a second lawsuit over genetically modified rice. Bayer, of course, connected to the Nazis. Fact. Anthrax warning for UK heroin users. This story from foodsafetynews.com is something we'd gone over before. One of those strange stories that doesn't seem to get very much attention that, yeah, there's a bunch of heroin in France that's tainted with anthrax, and where did it come from? We know, of course, the feds quietly admit that Bruce Ivins wasn't the lone gunman behind the U.S. anthrax attacks, but of course that happens at the bottom of the page. Pentagon plans to create immortal synthetic organisms. That's from allgov.com. And you can't, again, make this stuff up. You watch movies that have black ops and rogue networks and high technology. Who do you think gets the ideas from who? Pentagon plans to create immortal synthetic organisms. Take the Fountain of Youth, throw in some Blade Runner, and you have the Department of Defense's latest futuristic concept for warfare known as biodesign, of course, brought to us by DARPA, seeking to create synthetic organisms that can either live forever or die exactly when their masters want, not unlike the replicants in the 1982 sci-fi classic Blade Runner, of course directed by Ridley Scott, who is no stranger to working with the Central Intelligence Agency and spooks on his films like Enemy of the State or Body of Lies, or his brother, Tony Scott. I think Tony Scott did Enemy of the State, but you get my drift. The Central Intelligence Agency is more than just a building in Langley, Virginia. It's far, far, far exceeded anything it was ever supposed to have been, tied back to those sinister years just after World War II and the National Security Act, creating the CIA and the NSA, and essentially the national security state. There was a recent earthquake in Illinois. And yes, it really did happen. Hell froze over. Washington, D.C. knocked out cold by record snow. It's been rather mild here in Oregon. Of course, kind of dreary and wet. But nothing like the weather I'd be getting if I were still back east. So hopefully everybody's doing all right. Because it gets uglier and uglier and uglier. We're now into all the latest police state updates. Emergencies, subversives, and private arms collections. So when we go through all these lists, here's a little look behind the scenes, if you will. Because I'm no genius. I just pay attention. I did a lot of college radio back east. Meanwhile, I was investigating the cover-ups and the alternative history. I took that college radio know-how and kind of translated it over to doing controversial news on the web. But you can do it too. You can do it in your town, in your city, in your state, whatever. I basically subscribe to feeds from websites that I like or that have good and interesting news from all ends of the spectrum. I keep little folders that those stories fit into. Oh, is this a story about, you know, food? Is this about computer stuff? They go in all their folders, and then I post it up online for you, adding the info, saving those articles into an archive. Keeping the articles is an important thing, because you never know when they may go down the memory hole. And that was a real thing. Or, I mean, it's a real term. It was, remember, from 1984, that's what Winston would put things down the memory hole. Removing information from society. So that's what we're doing here. We're making sure information doesn't get removed. And yes, Virginia, America is still in an official state of emergency. If we jump to Washington's blog, they note that a reader asked whether the U.S. is still in an official state of emergency, and if so, what that means. The answer is yes, we are still in an official state of emergency. Specifically, on September 11th, 2001, the government declared a state of emergency. That declared state of emergency was formally put into writing on September 14th, 2001. A national emergency exists by reasons of the terrorist attacks at the World Trade Center, New York, and the Pentagon, and the continuing and immediate threat of further attacks on the United States. Now, therefore, I, George W. Bush, President of the United States of America, by virtue of the authority vested in me as President by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, I hereby declare that the national emergency has existed since September 11th, 2001. That declared state of emergency has continued in full force and effect from 9/11 throughout the Bush administration to the present. On September 10th, 2009, President Barack Obama continued the state of emergency. Quote, the terrorist threat that led to the declaration on September 14th, 2001 of a national emergency continues. For this reason, I have determined that it is necessary to continue in effect after September 14th, 2009, the national emergency with respect to the terrorist threat. With a link to WhiteHouse.gov. Does this really mean anything? Yes, it does. Let's get a piece from The Washington Times, September 18th, 2001, quote, simply by proclaiming a national emergency on Friday, President Bush activated some 500 dormant legal provisions, including those allow him to impose censorship and martial law. This goes in to all the special section codes, United States code, and it's documented and it's linked up. You can get so much of this that basically lays out exactly where we are. If we go by the rule book that we all thought we were going by, however, they're trying to throw it out the window and we're trying to claim it or reclaim it without even getting into the question of whether that rule book was even meant for plebs like you and me in the first place. Technically, legally, the Obamasiah continues Bush's 9/11 national emergency. Change you can believe in. Paul Joseph Watson goes into that same idea again, basically saying, well, no, just go back to sleep. There's no New World Order. Even though we have Newsweek articles talking about conspiracist kooks who wear tinfoil hats. Even though we know Obama's regulatory czar, Cass Sunstein, wants to quote-unquote infiltrate conspiracy theorist groups. We know recently that a plan signed by the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the Pentagon gives them the right to, quote, kill innocent people and commit acts of terrorism in U.S. cities to create public supports for war. That's from the Operation Northwoods. Operation Ajax, where the CIA did false flag terror to overthrow the democratically elected government of Iran. Operation Gladio, stay behind terror groups run by NATO in collusion with the CIA all throughout Italy, killing dozens. On and on and on. And Soros and Kissinger and the Rockefellers and all these guys openly talk about the New World Order. But if you say it exists, it's a bad thing. They'll deny it. Well, how about this? South Carolina now requires subversives to register. This would be funny if it wasn't so scary, or maybe be scary if it wasn't so funny. South Carolina just wants to make sure that if you're like a member of Al-Qaeda or a homegrown terrorist group, that you should register as such. They'd appreciate it. More on that from Raw Story. Homeschooling German family granted U.S. asylum. That fascinating story is available from thelocal.de. And now we get to the biometrics that I referenced a little bit ago. Biometrics is essentially using the technology to digitally map your face. And once they get that good photo in the database, they can match you from anywhere else. Iris scanning. Codex Alimentarius basically means the food code book. Biometrics basically means the math of your body. And they're working out the math of your body. They've been setting it up, and now they're, of course, announcing it to you. Eye scanner technology going to the Colorado police.
This technology, you can never release the wrong person. The last thing they do on their way out the door is making sure that that iris matches that person's.
Fighting crime with brand new biometric technology, the high-tech ID system making its first appearance in Colorado law enforcement. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Ron Zappola.
And I'm Deborah Takahara. The Arapaho County will be the first agency in Colorado to begin identifying criminals by scanning their eyes.
That's right, Deb. Despite fears of Big Brother from critics, the technology has proven far more reliable than any other ID system. New tonight, Fox 31's Dave Young is live in Arapaho County with how the analysis works. Dave?
Yeah, Ron, pretty soon when you're booked into jail here, you'll be more than just photographed and fingerprinted. The office here was one of just a handful of more than 3,000 in the country to win part of this federal grant to roll out this new system that definitely puts the eye in ID.
This device analyzes a human iris, which has 235 identifying points of reference versus a fingerprint 65. It provides a 12 times more accurate ID.
Fingerprints change, but irises stay stable throughout your life, which is why it's a great biometric to identify somebody with.
Lawton helped develop this new technology. A federal grant allows Arapaho County to be first in the state to apply it to law enforcement. A deputy helps demonstrate how it works.
He won't tell us who he is. The camera is taking a digital photograph of his eyes. Saturation, the focus, the quality. The camera is talking to him, telling him whether or not he's in range. In 6 seconds, the information has come back that this is who he is.
In government studies so far, with more than 2 million cross matches, there's never been a false positive.
After initial testing, Arapaho County will share the technology with other law enforcement agencies, sharing criminal inmate ID records.
And particularly after we've done it for a period of time, after a year, we will have upwards of 20,000 inputs into this database.
It'll also be used to track missing kids and seniors.
We see this as the future. This will be the first step when you come in. We'll match your iris to your records, and your records will come up.
A record that's impossible to fake.
Now, eventually, a law enforcement officer will be able to use a smartphone and take a picture of someone's eyes or their face, run it through the system, and within seconds have a positive ID, something right now that can take hours. Back to you.
Dave, thanks very much.
Thanks. Thanks so much for rolling out police state technology that they've pretty much prepared you for, prepped you for, predictive programming in the media, Minority Report, AI, and all that, and so much else. As I glance at Google News right now, we see 50 minutes ago from the Washington Post, Red Line Metro train derails near Farragut North Station. Crowded Red Line Metro train heading from Farragut North toward DuPont Circle derailed Friday morning between the two stations, trapping 345 people underground for an hour and a half before they could be pulled out. I suppose we add that on to all the recent problems that the DC Metro system has been having. You can get that in the archives on MediaMonarchy.com. So that's why we look at the breaking news. Suspicious subjects beware. Citizens on patrol. MiddletownJournal.com. Where is this from? Middletown, Ohio. Suspicious subjects beware. Citizens are on patrol. It's the nanny police. It's the nanny state. Paying people to spy on you. Your neighbor spying on you. Did you recycle incorrectly? We've got more on that in just a little bit. So it's interesting to grab these articles from the local regional media, all announcing it to you. Residents fumed over weekend alcohol and firearm ban. This is from DailyCaller.com, and I believe this referred to a curfew for adults that said they couldn't drive. So no one could go to the liquor store or get guns. You couldn't have any of that stuff. Getting you acclimated to more control. Pennsylvania National Guard takes control of interstate highway system again, this done during the weather events. Not terrorism related, but now any event, they use it. They never let a crisis go unexploited. They use the military for PR purposes. Tied into this, Pittsburgh mayor calls in the National Guard just to do police work.
Hello, and good evening to everybody out there.
This is Archangel in Pittsburgh, coming to you live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Pittsburgh, city of champions. I mean, Pittsburgh, city of fascism. In another move, Mayor Luke Ravenstahl has called out the National Guard in the city of Pittsburgh with the blessing of the governor because of the declared state of a snow emergency throughout the state. Now, last night, I originally watched the news reports where they had stated that the National Guard would be used to help firemen and paramedics and to move people around who were stranded, had lost the heat or power to their homes, or were elderly that needed to take it to the warming centers. Now, tonight, it's been announced, you know, what I believe is mission creep, that now it's changed. The National Guard is going to patrol with the Pittsburgh police. So this is just my first video on this. I'll be adding to it. I wanted to get this out there right away. National Guard has been called out in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania because of the declared state of emergency due to the snow. And the mayor, Luke Ravenstahl, in conjunction with the governor, is now using the National Guard.
So that's another great example of local activist media coming out of Pittsburgh. That video brought to me by way of Cryptogon.com. Now, we'll shift gears slightly, but it's all police state updates. We've been following the case of the Christmas bomber, the underwear bomber, Mutalab, since pretty much the week it happened on MediaMonarchy.com. And I said earlier in the show we were going to get into the rogue networks. Doing that, like I think no one else can, is investigative journalist and author Webster Tarpley. Here he is recently on Russia Today discussing Mutalab.
Our top story this hour, sometimes you gotta fight evil with evil. Well, that may be the philosophy behind the failed Christmas Day bombing. More details are being released that authorities not only knew about Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab, but they may have intentionally let him through the security gates. Why? Well, here to answer that question is investigative journalist Webster Tarpley. Webster, so back on January 27th, there was that testimony, of course, with the House Homeland Security Committee, and one of the people who was questioned at that time was Undersecretary of State for Management Patrick Kennedy, and they asked him why, if they knew that Abdulmutallab was a dangerous man, did they not revoke his visa, right? A fair question.
Yes.
Well, the thing is that he said that someone in the intelligence community said don't revoke it because they were already keeping their eye on him, and they thought that if they would continue to follow him, they would get information about this sort of broader network. Can you give us more details about that?
And this is, of course, a cover story, but it's a tremendously important revelation now for the first time. You may remember I argued right here on December 28th that Mutalab was a protected patsy taking part in a staged provocation, an orchestrated operation with a political goal, and that is now confirmed by this Undersecretary of State Kennedy, who is the guy responsible for consular services, visas, and so forth. What he says is this, that the State Department got the word from Nigeria, from the father coming in, the rich banker, telling about his son being in league with possible terrorists. And when that came in, the State Department was about to revoke the guy's visa, meaning he could never have gotten on the plane from Amsterdam to Detroit. However, there's one preliminary step, which is to poll, to query the other agencies, intelligence and law enforcement, and see if anybody has an objection. And indeed, there was an objection from at least one. We don't know how many, we don't know who, but at least one. And their story was, we have eyes on him, we're following him, we're tracking him, he's a little fish, he'll lead us to big fish. Now, this is the classic method of a national security override. You flag the guy's case with a national security override that says, nobody can arrest him, nobody can touch him, because we're tracking him. And that goes from a traffic cop to the CIA to anybody else. But of course, what this means is that there's a network in the U.S. government,
a rogue network. But why did they deny this intentionally? Because this all came out. If you read the transcript of the hearing, which I did back on January 27th, they sort of admitted this. But initially, they denied it. Why?
Initially, they said they smelled the his name wrong. Initially, they said they didn't connect the dots. These are cover stories. There's a rogue network of moles inside the U.S. government. It's been known for decades. It's the invisible government or the shadow government. Call it what you like. And they wanted this incident to occur. They wanted it, and they got it. And in the process, they were cynically indifferent to the danger represented by this guy with the bomb in his underwear. The plane could have blown up under slightly different conditions.
But if they were following him closely, how did they not know that he was planning to bomb their airline?
They knew who he was.
You're saying that the U.S. government knew that he was going to bomb the airliner and they were okay with it? That's very hard to believe.
I don't think it's hard at all, because if you pull on this thread, Kennedy was asked, which agency told you to do this? And he said, I'm not going to tell you that in public, but I'll tell you in private, in executive session. Now, if you go and find out who demanded that Mutaleb be admitted, given the visa, he gets the visa, he gets off the no-fly list, he's never on it, and he comes in, you'll find the network that staged this event, and that is indeed the shadow government. You pull on that cord, you get back to 9/11, Iran-Contra, the Kennedy assassination, and much else. That is what is now here. And this is not just me. The Obama White House on January 4th put out words through Richard Wolff on MSNBC saying that they thought that this had been intentional, done by a network with an alternative agenda. They were right, and they were just foolish to drop the investigation.
Well, that testimony was certainly very interesting to hear, and you did say that you had been here before questioning it, and now we do find out that they were trying to follow this sort of broader network, so they apparently intentionally did not revoke his visa. Webster Tripoli, thank you for your analysis.
Now, we went over so much of that in the past month on MediaMonarchy.com, but like I said, Webster Tarpley has a way of breaking it down simply, but also showing you the broader network of rogue actors. One more Christmas bomber note by way of Al Jazeera. Christmas bomber tied to Israel and FBI. From Reuters, court quashes student's terrorism conviction. As we've said time and time again, they never stop yelling about the busts that they make and the crisis and terror that they avert. But in the days and weeks and months later, when they usually have to throw everything out because it's a trumped-up case of provocateurs with intelligence connections, you got to dig for those stories. Police stage burglaries on homes. This is from The Telegraph. These, again, are drills. This is a different kind of drill. Staging burglaries on homes to teach people about ways their homes aren't protected. That's from The Telegraph. Newsweek asking, I'm sure rhetorically, can the FBI secretly track your cell phone? Another clip here on the police state updates. Paramilitary thugs steal private arms collection. Now, that's the headline from LouRockwell.com. But we've got reports from the Boston Herald and also a news piece with a video and the clip, and it's all linked up for you, that this guy was preparing for Armageddon.
A Tony multifamily home in the heart of quiet Manchester by the sea, its walls hiding an alarming near military grade stockpile.
11 rifles, 2 handguns, 2 Kevlar vests, 2 Kevlar helmets, 2 flare guns, 6 pairs of handcuffs, 2 bayonet knives, 17 military ammunition containers.
Plus a cache of tear gas and pepper spray grenades, all acquired in the last 9 months, police say, by this man, 45-year-old Gregory Girard. Local, state, and federal authorities were tipped off by his wife, a Cambridge psychiatrist, who told local police she was afraid to go home.
He's convinced that martial law is imminent and that he made the following statements recently to her. Don't talk to people, shoot them instead. It's fine to shoot people in the head because traitors deserve it.
Neighbors say Girard rarely left the house, hoarded food and medication, and even warned people in adjoining apartments not to be alarmed by what might sound like gunfire. Police say he had converted the third-story loft into a firing range, taking shots with his assault rifle at this illegal ballistic plate.
We have great concern with the sheer number of weapons, the proximity of other residences, and the potential for significant significant danger to our community.
A judge ordered Girard held for evaluation. Prosecutors say his wife plans to file a restraining order.
We are very thankful that no one was injured. We feel our community is safer having this type of weaponry off of the street, and we certainly hope that Mr. Girard gets the help that he needs.
The work continues at the Manchester-by-the-Sea Police Department because officers are going to have to catalog not only all the firepower but the ammunition they have to determine if any other laws have been broken. In Manchester-by-the-Sea, Dave Cartoon in 7 News.
The last note here on the police state updates, emergencies, subversives, and private arms collections. And God, I just have to say that last clip. Again, this is the meme of homegrown errorism. Violent radicalization. Because remember, when the phony conservatives are in, the enemy's over there somewhere. But when the fake progressives come in, the enemy is among us. So whether that's McVeigh's or this guy, watch how the characters are played on the stage. But we're going to close out the police state updates with just a reference to a video of silence. You have to see it for yourself, and it is frightening. It's out of Seattle, and it's just from the CCTV at a subway stop, metro stop. Security guards doing absolutely nothing as a 15-year-old girl is beaten up. Observe and report, indeed. All right, still so much to go over here, so let's pick up the pace and hit the 211 news purge. Reckless unraveling and an economic punch. We'll hit the 9/11 updates first. There are new aerial photos of the World Trade Center on 9/11 released. I think we've seen nine, even though there's 2,700 some. That's from the BBC. An attack from Harvard Law on the escalating 9/11 truth movement. More on Cass Sunstein and the cognitive infiltration of 9/11 conspiracy groups. More on that from Redacted News. Mystery of 9/11 unraveling, says a major Japanese weekly, saying, quote, the official story is not convincing. TSA detained a 21-year-old guy who is just a world traveler and actually had some Arabic flashcards. So they pulled him aside and asked him a bunch of questions such as, how do you feel about 9/11? The last note is a clip from We Are Change, where actor-comedian Hal Sparks speaks out for 9/11 truth. On to the drug war. When 70% support marijuana legalization, Starbucks gets the message. This story from NewsJunkiePost.com shows what happens when people actively put pressure on the businesses around them. And our quote from the beginning comes from Eric Margolis, writing for the Toronto Sun, February 5th, 2010. More empires have fallen because of reckless finances than invasion. These are, of course, our couple of Econo Crash updates. Tiny Tim Geithner says U.S. will never lose its AAA debt rating, from Bloomberg. Dodd, who doesn't want to run again by way of raw replay, there's a video talking about him with a constitutional amendment to prevent corporate personhood. If we could get movement on that, that would be positive. Grow more hemp, end corporate personhood. But the last Econo Crash note is another clip with Hank Paulson, the revolving door, you know, from Goldman Sachs to the Federal Reserve to the inside to the outside to the banksters to the gangsters. Paulson says that him being so close to Wall Street was a, quote, huge help. I'm sure it was. When Israel joins NATO, more on that from Euroknet, and Chinese military urges economic punch against U.S. That's from Reuters, and that ties in with Iran claiming and threataganding to deliver a punch to the West. Eight bloodthirsty dictators who benefited from U.S. aid. Jotter of a Rotter. .blogspot.com goes through, you know, just some of the dictators that we prop up because we like to create order out of chaos. That being those who have hijacked the West. An intelligent book on conspiracy theories. More on that from historycommons.org. And the media and the memes note, a great article from John Pilger by way of globalresearch.ca, why the Oscars are a con. Bump. Reality, quote-unquote, TV show lets you decide if women get abortions. Eugenics and reality TV together at last. VigilantCitizen.com goes into the occult symbolism of the new Sherlock Holmes movie. NBC giving Walmart a two-hour time slot to air Secrets of the Mountain TV movie. So is NBC so desperate that they're now letting Walmart play shows? We got to go back and grab one last Super Bowl update. And of course, it is one of the commercials. It's Audi's Super Bowl ads previewing the coming Enviro Police State.
Okay, so it's 3708, okay. Paper plastic.
Plastic.
That's the magic word. What? Green police. Ah. You picked the wrong day to mess with the ecosystem, plastic boy.
Battery! Battery. Let's go, take the house, come on!
Put the rind down.
Sure.
That's a compost infraction.
Uh-oh. Did you install these bulbs?
Yeah. Tragedy strikes tonight where a man has just been arrested for possession of an incandescent light bulb.
What do you guys think about plastic bottles now?
The water setting is at 105. Yeah.
You got a TDI here?
Clean diesel.
You're good to go, sir.
Good afternoon, officers. Are those foam cups you're drinking from?
Yeah.
Can the police step out of the car and put them on the hood?
Jesus. That was the first time I'd actually really listened to that, and it sounds like Cheap Trick actually re-recorded that song for Aldi. So, shame piled upon shame. So, they're laughing about it, but announcing it to you at the same time. And that is what we're talking about. Quickly, through the murder and mayhem, at least five dead in a Connecticut gas plant explosion. More on that from Reuters. And a strange one and an op-ed from naturalnews.com. Big Pharma executive murders 8-year-old son with Xanax and Ambien. Now, you won't see that get as much attention as Christian parents who don't give their kids any drugs. Or the crazy eugenicist pharma doctors who do nothing but give everybody drugs. So, you want 1984, you want Brave New World. That's the choice they're giving us, basically. The Obamasiah updates. Liberals get a war president of their very own. More from informationclearinghouse.info. And you know it's true. Ain't a damn thing changed. Just people trying to go on as if everything's hunky-dory. An interesting one from the New York Times. 1 year down, a presidency yet to go. Bush faces the new world order. There's that word again that doesn't exist. Court keeps White House spy documents secret. Big surprise. That's from threat level. We, of course, went over Bill Clinton getting out of the hospital. 75% angry at government's current policies. That poll and all the stats are available from RasmussenReports.com. We see a public growing increasingly weary and wary. But they're going to play us all against each other, because that's the divide and conquer way. Let's you and him fight. And we'll all tear each other apart and never look up above and see who's playing us off against each other. Biden says large-scale terror attack on U.S. unlikely. And again, you won't see that get too much attention. Although, that report comes from FoxNews.com. The last few notes here on this news purge are of the war whores variety. U.S. and its allies have 700 bases in Afghanistan. More on that from Danger Room. AllGov.com goes into a disturbing case of dying in vain in Afghanistan. Basically, guys going in to secure some outpost, dying in the process, but it was already a place they knew they weren't going to hold anyway. It was just a clerical error. Obama administration to try Canadian child soldier before military commission. Again from allgov.com. This guy was 15 years old when he was picked up. Off to the military tribunal. Nearly 60% in a UK poll say that torture is okay. KBR asks for dismissal of Oregon soldiers' lawsuit. That's by way of the Chicago Tribune, but the local press has covered this story. And we say this time and time again. They spend no shortage of money to unleash the shock and awe. And again, even if you believe the official stories about all of this shit, even though you should know full well all war is based on deception, they won't even cover your ass when it's over. They don't even take care of the guys who go and do this. So KBR trying to get kicked out of court, Oregon soldiers, and there's guys I think all around the country, and I think people in West Virginia as well as other states. Chemical exposure thanks to Kellogg Brown and Root. First flight test of persistent surveillance system to protect soldiers. That's from DefenseTalk.com. And lastly, and yes, putting the horrors into the war horrors, Blackwater billed the U.S. for a morale welfare recreation. And what is a morale welfare recreation? That is a prostitute. You should try and deduct that on your upcoming taxes. Quickly now, the last two stories, and I think we've just about gotten everything here. This going back to last Saturday, February 6th, 2010, by way of Reuters. Polish priest checks fingerprints for mass audience. A Polish priest has installed an electronic reader in his church for school children to leave their fingerprints in order to monitor their attendance at mass. The Gazeta Wyborcza Daily said on Friday, again, this is out of Poland, the pupils will mark their fingerprints every time they go to church over 3 years, and if they attend 200 masses, they will be freed from the obligation of having to pass an exam prior to their confirmation. The pupils, they love it. The flashbacks I've provided for you on this story hopefully elucidate this a little bit. Going all the way back to October of 2006, speed through the grocery checkout with just a wave of your arm. Ohio students buy lunch with their fingerprint. That's from August of 2009. And most recently, November of 2009, on MediaMonarchy.com, teacher claims fingerprinting is mark of the beast. Always keeping an eye on the media and the memes and the occult religious undertones to things. But finally, here on episode 157 of MediaMonarchy.com, we return to something and a topic and a person we discussed back in December of 2007 on MediaMonarchy.com. Charlie Wilson, former Texas representative and Mujahideen funder, is dead at the age of 76. This report from the Associated Press, with a lot of embedded media for you on MediaMonarchy.com. Charlie Wilson, the fun-loving Texas congressman whose backroom deal-making funneled millions of dollars in weapons to Afghanistan, allowing the country's underdog Mujahideen rebels to beat back the mighty Soviet Red Army, died Thursday at 76. Wilson represented Texas's second congressional district in the U.S. House from 73 to 96 and was known in Washington as Good Time Charlie for his reputation as a hard-drinking womanizer. Wilson, a Democrat, was considered both a progressive and a defense hawk. That sounds familiar. While his efforts to arm the Mujahideen in the 80s were a success, spurring a victory that helped speed the downfall of the Soviet Union, he was unable to keep the money flowing after the Soviets left. Afghanistan plunged into chaos, creating an openly, eventually filled by the Taliban, which harbored al-Qaeda terrorists. After the September 11th attacks carried out by al-Qaeda terrorists trained in Afghanistan, the U.S. ended up invading the country it had once helped liberate.
And the inspiration behind the movie Charlie Wilson's War has died. A Texas hospital says the 12-term Democratic congressman died after suffering cardiopulmonary arrest. Tom Hanks, you may remember, he played the larger-than-life Wilson in the 2007 movie. It told the story of Wilson's push to provide weapons to Afghan fighters after the Soviet invasion. Wilson was 76 years old. Well,
I knew him when he was a congressman, a great, great American, great congressman from Texas, a real larger-than-life figure, did amazing work. He almost single-handedly helped Afghanistan set back the Soviet Union after the invasion, and our deepest condolences to his family. He was a great American.
Yeah, he was by all accounts just this really charismatic figure, and it captures it in the movie. That is one movie that I did see.
Yeah.
So it's a great portrayal of him.
He was a fabulous, fabulous guy. All right, thanks very much.
That brief clip does help, I think, kind of illustrate what could be the hopeful mission statement of Media Monarchy. The big, spectacular show that's put on for you. Shadows cast on a wall like in the cave. But it's propaganda. Charlie Wilson's war helped give us 9/11. That essential report going back to December of 2007 on MediaMonarchy.com. And even more, Charlie Wilson's war is imperialist propaganda. This gets to the heart of so many things that we talk about. Funding our supposed enemies. And I try and do the best job I can for you, trying to break things down for you here on MediaMonarchy.com to try and show you the shell game that's going on. We're pretty much out of time. I want to briefly mention some of the interesting visitors hitting MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Navy Network Information Center out of Pensacola, Florida. Ubisoft Entertainment out of Montreal. IBM, the Final Solutions Company out of Poughkeepsie, New York. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints out of course, Salt Lake City. Portland State University, of course. Someone Googling Zachary Bucharest, the student accused of being an Israeli sniper and FBI provocateur. Get all that info at the top of this episode. And lastly, the Federal Court of Canada out of Ottawa Googled Freeman, Clyde Lewis, Iran, MP3. My friends, that's all the time I have. If you enjoy the show, if you find it valuable, please help spread the word and help this show and website reach a wider audience. I can't do it without you. My name is James Evan Pilato. It's February 12th, 2010. This has been episode 157 of MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.